89.3 FM. This is member supported. WPFW, Washington.
Good evening, Maryland, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Garland Nixon, and you are listening to News Views on here on WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. On every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m., we have great shows. We have great guests. We talk about all kinds of great things. As you probably know, if you've been listening to WPFW for any amount of time, we've moved our studio. And so normally, you know, I'm getting your input. I'm taking your calls. But here tonight, we won't be taking calls. Another week or so, we'll be able to start taking calls once we get all of our numbers back up and going. But from what I've been hearing, listening to WPFW, the sound is sweet, crisp, and clear. Very, very good sound we have now. So we're going to have a great show. 6 to 7 p.m. We're talking about news, and we're going to get some very interesting views. And tonight I have with me my partner in crime and cohort, Mark Levine. Mark, you there?
I'm here.
Mark is there. That's good news. And we have a special guest co-host, and we have Christopher Chambers. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great.
Wonderful, wonderful. Are we hearing Chris here? You hearing Chris, Mark?
Yeah, I am fine.
Okay, great. Oh, good. Great, okay. Great, great. Okay, Chris. So give us a little bit of background. You're a Georgetown lawyer, media. Tell our audience who you are.
Where do I start? I'm currently at Georgetown University. I'm a professor of media studies, teaching graduates and undergrads. I'm also a regular pundit on Russian TV, which we just scored. Larry King is coming out of retirement to come to D.C. and work for Vladimir Putin. So it should be an interesting time over there. And
maybe they'll have a show together, the
King-Putin
show.
We've got to get everybody together because it's going to be crazy in D.C. And so that's basically what I do. I also sometimes I write for TheRoot.com and MSNBC's The Griot. And I just try to keep myself busy in both local and national media studies and political affairs, and just, you know, all around D.C. native. Mm-hmm. Although I am a Ravens fan, not a Redskins fan.
Well, and if
that's
I'm not,
all you need to know,
and,
right?
And if I'm not mistaken, you like our dear friend Mark here, you are also graduated from law school, right?
That's right. That's right. About back in the day, you know, but I decided to give it up for something really seedy like journalism.
What law school you go to?
University of Baltimore.
Believe it or not, let me throw out a plug for my daughter. My daughter just graduated magna cum laude from University of Baltimore a week ago.
Oh,
I'm proud of that. Shout out to Miss Ashley Randall, my daughter. and her husband. At any rate, we got plenty to talk about, Mark. Media studies, and you know, Mark and I, we unofficially study the media. I don't know, Mark. We just mostly complain about the media, don't we?
Well, that's what studying is.
You there, Mark?
Oh yeah, we do complain about it a lot.
Yeah. So we got plenty to talk about, and we've got things to talk about. One of the things, let's start off talking about this, and I believe that, in my humble opinion, and I've said this before, and I have a close friend who traveled a lot around in South America and around the world in countries where people weren't, you know, they weren't necessarily impoverished, but they weren't, they were lower middle class, working class, working poor, a lot of working poor people who survived, but, you know, they weren't in desperate straits, but they weren't doing very well in various parts of the world. But he said, generally, these people were much more politically knowledgeable. They understood the politics. They understood how politics worked in their country. They understood politically who was who much better than the people in America who are allegedly so knowledgeable about everything. And when we discussed that, let's start with Chris. Chris, why do you think it is that these people understood their politics, their government, and what was going on there better than the people in America?
Oh, man.
Or at least that perception was there from an outsider.
Where do we start? All three of us could write like a 700-page book on that. But, I mean, to boil it down, I'll just boil it down with an illustration. In May, Fox News ratings was the highest it's been because of these so-called scandals.
Right.
I mean, now one of them is real with hacking into the reporters' phone lines, but Benghazi, the IRS, that's not real. But there's a perception of scandal. Their ratings were through the ceiling. MSNBC's have gone down, and they went down past HLN, which was covering what? The Jody Arias trial.
Right, right.
Now, you can draw your conclusions right there. You've got
fake scandals on one end.
Fake scandals and raw meat to a lot of paranoid, fearful right-wing people, and then this circus trial of this clearly disturbed woman who, you know, murdered this guy, and it has held the attention of how many people for how many weeks with Nancy Grace and Dr. Drew and all these other people, and that beats out NBC's kind of, you know, kind of talk show arm that were talking about issues. So, I mean, now, of course, you could say, well, they got silly shows like, say, Chris Matthews is maybe overstaying his welcome on TV, and then poor Reverend Sharpton. I mean, you know, Saturday Night Live did a terrible just hatchet job on him in the last episode, which was actually pretty funny. So, I mean, you've got all that going on. What does that tell you about Americans? We are, because the enemy is ourselves, preoccupied with a lot of nonsense that we either can buy into and all wear the tinfoil hats together, or just, you know, get some kind of vicarious thrill, because our lives are empty. If you're going into another country, there's a lot of stuff that's going on there where people, you know, as you were saying earlier in the setup, our people are not desperately poor, but they have some struggles. And I think the struggle focuses people. We're not focused here. And again, even the people who are struggling are distracted with entertainment and a lot of brain mush to really be more focused on and fixing the struggle. So, you know, you've got it coming from all ends to all economic strata, all races. I mean, we're just rudderless right now, and we're susceptible to a lot of crap. I mean, I don't any academic term for it other than crap.
Yeah, there's academic terms. You can't use them on a family radio station. How's that? Mark, is he on the money there?
Well, yeah, I think what we have to remember all the time is that media is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to succeed where they get the most eyes focused. And as Chris pointed out, well, look, why were more people watching Fox and MSNBC? Because the perception, rightly or wrongly, I would agree with Chris, mostly wrongly, but the perception is Obama's in trouble, and so all the conservatives, they can't wait to turn on the news. How is Obama in trouble? The liberals, well, we're despondent. We're Obama's in trouble, so we turn off the news and go out and play outside. Now, conversely, you know, if Bush is in trouble, if, you know, when Dick Cheney is accused of outing a CIA agent and being accused of treason, now we're on the horn. We're looking at the media and the conservatives. Well, they're playing with their kids outside. And then, of course, Jody Arias just shows, well, we all have bad taste. And, hey, we want to see some crazy woman killer. Let's go look at a crazy woman killer. You know, in that essence, it's not that different from, I guess, the Romans looking at the Colosseum and watching people tear each other apart. The heart of it is it's sensationalism. The media is not about the news. It's about whatever draws the most eyes, and sometimes that's politics, and sometimes it's just craziness.
Well, let me throw another wrinkle in, too, because that's certainly part of the mix. But there's another wrinkle, as is demonstrated by the Koch brothers' latest attempted venture. They're out trying to buy up all the, you know, the major newspapers. And that is, while the oftentimes the news we see is filler to keep us occupied between the Nike and McDonald's advertisements, the overpriced shoes that are made in a sweatshop costing the lives of peasants and, you know, throughout the third world, and food that's going to, you know, virtually kill us and our whole families with one bite, that generally what we get is filler between those two things. But the other problem is this. There are more nefarious forces at work. And so now what we're seeing, Mark and Chris, we're seeing people who, and this has been going on really, on the far right has been working on this since the 80s, in my opinion, if not at least in the 80s when they started recognizing the power of the media. We've got forces out here who recognize that, okay, I'm a member of the top 0.00001%. If I own the media and if I can get the message out to the average working person, you know, I remember I said this on Fox 2 years ago. During the medieval times, you could not convince a serf that it was in his or her best interest to give more money to the lords and to the earls. You couldn't say, come to a serf who was starving with bread and say, you know, if we just gave more money to those rich people up there in the castle, you'd be better off. They'd hit you over the head with whatever, you know, implement that they used to dig plants with at the time. But now, because these top 0.0001% people own the media, they can utilize the media to convince some poor schmuck who works in for $30,000 a year changing transmissions that he's going to be better off if they only cut taxes for people who barely pay any now because they make all of their money through the stock market. Chris.
Well, you hit it on the head. I mean, you know, but you have to also introduce an element of fear and paranoia into that serf. I mean, now, if you...
I know I'm getting afraid and paranoid based on all this going on. I don't know about the rest of them.
Yeah, but if you're talking about, you know, a serf who might be free and you kind of pit him against the slave who isn't, then you probably can cook in some real kind of believability because it's based on that fear and that ignorance. But I mean, you know, we're talking about a media now that is so pervasive. You have the world in the palm of your hand, literally. Mm-hmm. But what do people do with it? They're playing games and really reading gossip.
Right.
And the right wing billionaires actually understand that, and they can capitalize on that by controlling these outlets. And if you control the newspapers, dying as they may
You're
be,
right.
they do have, you know, their online presence. But the newspapers are the ones who are doing a lot of the cutting edge investigative reporting. So if you can control that, you know, because the news that you retweet has to come from somewhere.
Right.
So if you can control that, then you're taking that stuff right at the source. So even if it's a bad, if it's not a big rate of return, what do you care? You're making money off of your oil anyway. So, you know, you're basically subsidizing the newspaper with your oil money or whatever it is, or your real estate money, and you're controlling that valve of information of original reporting, especially investigative reporting.
Right.
And so, you know, you're basically controlling that information commodity. So, you know, that's why they're going after it. They aren't stupid. Just because newspapers are losing money, that's not why they're going after it.
Well, Mark, Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say the only place where I disagree with you both, is the idea that this is something new. We can go back to feudalistic days, and the serf was told that the king is all-powerful, the king is divine, the king comes from God, and he needs to serve the king. And indeed, that was the propaganda that the king put out, because he didn't want his serfs revolting and trying to grab all the gold in the castle. So really the idea that extremely rich people have been trying to get very poor people to worship them and believe in them and give them benefits is as old as mud. So that's nothing new. What's new, of course, is the forms. You mentioned the Koch brothers. I do want to, for once, praise the media, because PBS apparently decided to run the anti-Koch brother documentary anyway. And, of course, I don't think they'll get any more big donations from either Koch brother. But to give a little bit of credit where credit's due for pushing back, because it's a rare instance in today's.
But we're talking PBS, which is a different animal, of course.
Right. But, you know, PBS, obviously, listen, about 80% of their funds, probably closer to 90% today, is private. It's not public.
Mm-hmm.
Very little of it is public. And so they need the money, and to their credit, despite the fact they need the money, they did push back and aired an independent documentary which criticized the Koch brothers, even after I forget which brother gave them I forget how many untold millions. So there is some pushback by some honest media. It's probably the exception that proves the rule, but it does exist.
Well, and I would say this to both of you. I think what we're looking at is this. We're looking at going back to something that was before. And here's what I mean. You know, for most of the time that mankind was on earth, well, not basically back when people were living in tribes, things you might call that communism and socialism, when everyone in the tribe actually looked out for other people
exactly.
in the tribe and had the same size hut, and if somebody was sick, everyone in the tribe made sure the sick, you know, and they took care of the, okay, those were, excuse me, uncivilized people who actually looked out for each other.
Exactly.
But God knows some kind of way man became, quote, civilized. And then we got that feudal society where now everybody doesn't look out for the tribe and you've got a small amount. And most of the so-called civilized times of human beings were very, very feudalistic. So what happens? With the Industrial Revolution comes unions, and for the first time, really, in my opinion, for the first time in the history of so-called civilized mankind, you start getting a middle class. And so over the course of the 100 years or so, we build the middle class, gets broader and broader. And you know those people that used to be the earls and the king and et cetera, and the aristocracy? They don't like that. They kind of like it the way it was before. In my opinion, we went to we moved towards a civilization where we had a middle class and we had some more fairness, and they are working to get us back to where we were before, and they're doing a good job. I'm looking right now in the Eurozone right now, because people have been convinced that, against all evidence, that austerity is a good idea. The Eurozone now has a 12.2% unemployment rate. In Greece, for under 25, it's like 62%. So what's happened? We in America are dealing with a sequester, which is austerity. We watch everyone else. We watch all these other countries enact austerity measures, and their economy goes to heck. And then we are convinced by the top 1% who owns the media that the way to do things, if you don't believe me, watch Morning Joe every morning, and he'll tell you how important austerity is and how it's going to bring us back from the brink of whatever, you know, austerity in the first place brought us to. But my point is, I think what you're saying, Mark, is right. But I think as a society and the world and some parts of the world moved away from that feudal system, and they're working to bring us back. And I think they're pretty darn successful. Chris.
Well, you know, you don't even have to look at other countries. You can look at states like Wisconsin, with Scott Walker, anti-union. You can look at New Jersey with Chris Christie and his cult of personality. Their austerity has driven those states into the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you don't, you know, and then you can look at California, which has had its problems, both, you know, that they've created for themselves or they've experienced, but they're actually not doing too bad.
Right.
So, you know, you don't have to go too far, but the media doesn't cover that. You know, I mean, I'm not talking about the conservative media, websites, radio shows. I'm talking about, you know, our quote mainstream.
You mean there is a media that isn't conservative? I must have missed
true.
It. WPFW.
Right. But but you also have to look at this new wave of kind of feudal lords who are kind of have separated themselves from the Kochs. You look at the guys who run Google, or you look at Mark Zuckerberg and how they're actually the new robber barons, and they are operating under this veil or mystical mist that they are somehow different than Rupert Murdoch or the Koch brothers, but they're starting to operate now very much like, you know, J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie. Well, Andrew Carnegie wasn't that mean and low down dirty, but he did some dirty things, but people like that. And they're operating on that level, and they are really not trying to get the average blue collar guy and girl worked up on a lot of fear. They're really they're really looking at younger people and basically brainwashing them into thinking that this new form of austerity, where they're basically on their iPads all day in a coffee shop looking for a job, is the new norm.
Right.
And that they should buy into that. So they're coming at it. They're biting into it from a different end. They're a different kind of monster. And of course, they're the ones who are going to be players in the media too, because they want a piece of this pie as well. You know, the people who have social media sites, and even the ones who own the hardware like Verizon or the systems or AT&T, and you see Comcast Universal now. They're all going to be players in this too. So maybe our only hope is to be the little people at the bottom. You know, when you see Godzilla and Rodan trying to kill each other, we'll hope they do kill each other and we can rise back up, because right now we're in the way, basically.
I just want to make one comment on austerity, because you're absolutely right. That is the conservative mantra today, ever since President Obama's been president. In fact, when Bill Clinton was president, basically the rule is anytime a Democrat is president, they want austerity, because they know that without austerity, the Democratic president is going to make sure the middle class and the working poor are going to have a chance to succeed in America. And that means that, that the wealthy won't get as much. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago during George W. Bush's presidency and back when I worked in Congress, when the Republicans were the party of spend, spend, spend. They wanted to spend more tax cuts for the rich. They wanted more money for the military. They wanted more corporate welfare. They wanted more special benefits for hedge fund owners and oil companies and those that fly on corporate jets. And at that time, there was no discussion of austerity. And I'm quite convinced if there's another Republican as president, then they will again throw away austerity, because then they can truly help the people that brought them to the table, the people who fund their campaigns. So the real, I think, scary thing about the whole austerity conversation is not that Republicans think it's right now, and it's clearly not right now. It's not right when you're in a recession. The only time you should ever consider austerity is maybe like in the Bill Clinton years when times were really good. But the really scary thing is that people have already forgotten that Republicans have entirely switched sides on this issue just 6 years ago, and pretending they were always the party of low spending and cutting taxes, and they weren't. Just 6 years ago, they were the party of more spending as long as it was on the super rich. So they changed the conversation, and Americans are so myopic or
distracted
or have amnesia that they forget exactly what their policy was. Just 6 years ago.
And Mark, it's also, excuse me, psychological cognitive dissonance, as they say, because when you talk to the average security or defense firm worker, an executive who's probably put in 25 years with the Army and is working for a defense contractor or a security contractor, And they, you know, they hate Obama, and Obama's going to destroy the country. Then they go out in their lunch hour and they shoot off their AR-15s at the gun range. And you say, look, you were a government employee for 25 years. Your family got government health care. You benefited from our tax money, and now you're benefiting from again. How different are you from these people that you hate? And they will go absolutely bonkers because they know deep down that you're right. But they don't consider themselves government employees or dependent on the government when they have been. The government has given them a home, a life, an education for their kids. And even if you go back, you know, a generation, the government gave a whole bunch of guys coming home from World War II the GI Bill, and basically created the middle class.
Right.
The interstate highway system, you know, the federal housing act. You know, you can go back and talk to them about that, but you don't have to. You can just look at them and say, you work for a security contractor. You've been in the Army for 20 years and then retired. What are you? How are you any different than, say, the teacher,
right,
who's has a public salary, or the person in Section 8 housing
fireman
who's getting?
Yeah, right, yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, but they will go absolutely bonkers.
Anybody. Well, the teacher is not killing anybody. They're just
well, no, that's true. But I'm saying that, you know, in terms of their livelihood, they do not put themselves in that category because it is mentally torture for them to do so, and the media, you know, basically reinforces that when it should be educating people as to that. Because, you know, nobody wants to admit something, a basic truth about themselves. And that's probably what the basic, the lure of, say, Fox News is in getting this kind of brainwashing message out.
Well, there's something very consistent here. So, because one of the things Mark just brought up was an inconsistency, an apparent inconsistency. The Republicans are for austerity when our guy's in, they're, you know, against it when their guy's in. But that's not really true, because there is a very consistent message and a consistent set of policies. What the Republicans are for is anything, what the right wing in America, let's not even use the term, the right wing in America and the powerful, wealthy right wing in America, they are for any policies that takes from the poor and gives to the rich. During the Bush administration, what policies do we have? When they came in and they said, there's a surplus, what do we need to do? We need to give money back to the people. We need tax cuts. The surplus is there. We need tax cuts. The tax cuts, 90% went to the rich. And then we started a war. What do we need to do? Well, war, for goodness sakes, we need tax cuts. 90% went to the rich. So now they said, okay, my gosh, we need to cut off, we need austerity. And if you look at the latest budget from Paul Ryan, what do we need to do? We need to really cut a lot of money from the poor and the working class and all of their programs, but we need massive tax cuts for the wealthy. They have been very consistent, however they stated them, however they, whatever argument they made or whatever form their policies came in, were put in, they were always the same. You want to cut programs that help the working class, the working poor, and the poor, and the more you can take from the very poor, the better. Why? Because they have the least financial and political power. But so you take from those who have who don't have, and you give to those who already have, and that's consistent. So regardless of who's in or who isn't in, if you read the right wing policies and you read between the lines, you don't even have to read between the lines. All you have to do is look them between the eyes, and the policies are always the same. The problem is not their policies. The problem is not that they are consistent with their policies. Their problem is that people who are being victimized by their policies are supporting their policies. And I think that's part of what we're talking about here. Why people who are being victimized by the policy. It's like, to me, the log cabin Republicans or whatever, the gay Republicans. I always think right. to myself, how does that, you know, it's like, like chickens for Kentucky Fried for KFC. You know, a bunch of chickens get together and say, we support KFC. How does that, you know, I hate to say it's like black Republicans, or gay Republicans. How does that work? I don't know, Mark.
Well,
maybe I'm just getting off track here. I'm sorry. I kind of lost it for a second.
There's a very small percentage of gay Republicans, just like there's a very small percentage of black Republicans. So we do have one crazy black Republican running for lieutenant governor of Virginia, and he is wacko. So there are a few of them out there. But for the long, I think most of it, actually, the poor people that support the Republican Party are doing so because they're anti-gay, because they're white people who are racist, because they use the social norms and the social policies of the Republican Party to say, well, I may be poor, but at least I'm not gay or I'm not black or I'm not Latino. So they do divide and separate. And I actually think the social wing of the Republican Party is the reason why they get a lot of lower middle class support.
Yeah. And of course, what we were started off talking about, once again, you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, Dixon, Washington. I was going to say Washington Nixon, my last name in Washington, but that's an idea. We could name it after me. But Washington, D.C., my name's Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine and
Chris Chambers from Georgetown University.
And we're having a great talk. We're talking about the media. And with that, I got to defer to you guys because I forgot what the even heck I was talking about. It goes back to this. And that is how a twisted media, how a twisted message from the media gets out and twists the understanding and the knowledge and and ultimately the policies, because ultimately what we're talking about is policies. How do we get the how do we ultimately get policies in America that hurt the people? Or let me add this with something else we're going to have to talk about. In a few minutes we're going to have to go to a break for a moment, but the latest round of arguments over the gun rights people and the people who feel that we should have some level of gun control, and that is over 90% of the average voters, the regular people like you and I, are in favor of a policy. But you can't get that policy through. Which means that the 90% of the people who are in favor of the policy aren't running the country anymore, now are they? If they can't get their policies through, they're not running the country, are they, Chris?
No, they're not. I mean, it's almost a tyranny by minority, and not minority like people of color minority, which is what these people actually are playing off as for fear purposes, but a real faction, you know, which is not what even the framers of the Constitution, who they like to talk about all the time, were definitely not for that. Now, they weren't for majority peasant rule either.
Right.
But what they also did not want government by faction and government by party politics. Now, that probably was just lip service because they split into parties
right.
almost immediately. But at least their public statements were they did not want government by faction. And that's what we have right now. I mean, but, you know, the media feeds into that, too, as Mark was saying, because of the business model. You have a business model that demands sensationalism to get more eyeballs on the screen or clicks or finger swipes on the tablet. I'll give you an example really quick. The Republicans are making a really big deal about cutting the budget National Science Foundation because of a study where the mating habits of snails.
Well, you could have killed it the first part.
Right.
Because of a study. That's
right.
The problem they have with science.
Right.
They actually do studies.
Yeah, because it's science. Yeah,
right,
you know,
that's it.
Who knew? You know, and about the mating habits of snails. And the mainstream television outlets, all the cable giants and the networks ran with this. And the right-wing blogs and websites ran with this. And it wasn't until outlets like, you know, public, NPR, outlets like independent outlets like this station and independent websites basically went beneath the sensationalism, and of course they're trying to show both sides, you know, when there isn't both sides.
You're right, yeah.
There's this reason and just stupidity. Well, it came to be that the facts that if anybody had looked were that they were studying these things because people in the United States, in the South, in kind of, you know, places like Louisiana, and then in Africa, Latin America, and Asia, people were dying of liver flukes, mm-hmm. which are born out of these snails
right.
that live in these swamps and these rivers and places where there is not clean water. And in order to fight that and really put America's best foot forward, mm-hmm. not only around the world, but also...
It could happen here.
It could happen here, right. given what's going on here. They had to study how these snails mated so they could know how to kill them. The damn things.
Right.
Well, nobody in ABC, CBS, CNN, even MSNBC, Rachel Maddow never said anything about this.
Yep.
But you see, it's not the facts and the boring stuff that and the data that people want to talk about. They want to talk about the lunacy because that gets the eyeballs. Just like Mark said, you have to pay the piper, and that is the business model, especially when these media outlets are basically just small affiliates inside bigger, gigantic conglomerates, and they all have to turn a profit, and they are all moving, you know, from an entertainment model to make that profit. So, you know,
if the snails were just provocatively dressed.
Yes.
You know, like Lindsay Lohan or Kim Kardashian. If you can make snails sexy, that's hard to say.
We got to take a quick break, Mark. Mark, we got to take a quick break. You're listening to WPFW.
Right.
We're going to take a break. Garland Nixon here with Chris Chambers, Mark Levine. We'll be back in 1 minute. Good evening. Welcome back to WPFW here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Maryland. Hello, Virginia, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. Did I leave out Washington, D.C.? Well, for goodness sake, we're in Washington, D.C., and I left out Washington, D.C. That's not going to work. My name is Garland Nixon. You're listening to News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. I'm here with
Chris Chambers from Georgetown University.
And Mark Levine.
And we're talking politics. Unfortunately, we're not taking any calls. The next week or so, we're going to be able to take calls. We're still getting our sea legs back out underneath of us at the new studio. Oh, by the way, next week, we got a great guest. There's a book out, recently out, released called FDR and the Jews. And the author, Professor Alan Lichtman from American University, great guy. He wrote some great books. He wrote The Keys to the White House. He wrote White Protestant Nation, great book. And this is FDR and the Jews. And it's a great book. Interestingly enough, there have been various people have taken various positions that FDR didn't do enough for the Jews, or he was bad for the Jews, or that he did some wonderful things. And what Professor Lichtman and his co-author tried to do was be as unbiased as possible and to take as much information as they can and not take a book. Because most of the books that have been written have taken one position or another, that he was bad, that he didn't help the Jews enough throughout Nazi Germany or throughout that tumultuous period, or that he was great. And they try to take an unbiased view and just put forth information and kind of let you make a decision for yourself. So Alan Lichtman will be here. He is a brilliant man. He is a great guest. And make sure you listen, FDR and the Jews, next week. So back to the subject at hand. There is a subject that Mark knows also well that Garland Nixon here touches on every single week.
Walmart.
Without fail. Mark, how did you guess? My favorite place.
Predictable is
Yeah, unpredictable, Mark. Yes, Walmart. I've got a story on Walmart. And again, it is what's going on with our country. The reason I always touch on Walmart is because to me it reflects the problem right now. We have a company where the people who own it are the wealthiest family on the face of this planet. Six people are worth $120 billion. Their employees are basically literally starving and dying of easily preventable health conditions because they don't have they don't have health care coverage. They're dodging every law they possibly can in order to inflict this misery upon their employees. And I might add, the only thing one of those six people would have to do, these six people would have to do, is get together, since they own Walmart, and call the president and say, we've decided that we need to go ahead and give benefits to our employees and go ahead and raise their salaries. And they would still make an unmentionable fortune, billions and billions and billions of dollars. Even if they did that, they just wouldn't quite make as many billion dollars. And I always say it's unconscionable. I don't understand how these people sleep at night. But there is a new study out that shows that one Walmart's low wages could cost taxpayers $900,000 per year. It's in Wisconsin. There's been a number of studies. But basically what they do is they show they do an actual a scientific study. So I'm sure the Republicans would certainly be against that. But it shows that the wages are low, that many of them rely on food stamps and other government aid programs to fulfill their basic needs, and that they've got a number somewhere around $900,000 for just one Walmart in Wisconsin and all of the numbers that it cost us. So again, the media, we see, you know, Walmart's wonderful. And what happens? We, in some of the jurisdictions, many jurisdictions around, the message gets out that you want Walmart in your jurisdiction, and in fact, the county or the state or the city gives them these gigantic tax breaks to bring a Walmart in, and when they bring them in there, they lower the wages in the area, and then the people in the area actually pay. They subsidize Walmart because the people there are making so little that we have to provide, as a society, we provide the social programs. But yet, of all things that you are not going to see in the media, that's why I just use Walmart as one of them. You're not going to see the true damage that corporate American capitalism as it is. And when I say corporate American capitalism, because the term capitalism is so vague that it can be applied to what we had in the 50s. And what we have today, or what we had during the industrial, all which are very, very different fiscal and economic models. But the term capitalism or free market capitalism is applied to all of them when it doesn't really apply. Basically, you could argue it to any of them. But at any rate, so the media keeps us blind, and we're watching these corporations such as Walmart rip our guts out. Chris.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, look at the way that Walmart has to be evaluated is through independent media like PFW, is through websites like ProPublica, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and NPR. I mean, even NPR is a little timid mm-hmm. because they are this giant that people are scared of. You don't even need to even go that far and look at the benefits. You can look at their lack of benefits. You can look at the irony of this company and how it basically extols these American values, yet they're the ones who destroyed Main Street USA.
Right.
The stuff you see in Disney World and Disneyland, they killed that. Ma right. and Pa, they killed that. But yet they are the purveyors of American values. They also don't sell American products.
Right.
Like Mark was talking about Bangladesh. So they're killing indirectly and directly, literally killing people, because you have people working in sweatshops to create, you know, a $5 tank top made out of flammable material
right.
that people are going to sell, and then people are going to buy it because the only people who can afford their workers can only afford to shop there
right, right.
at Walmart. So it's going to be like the 19th century, the Industrial Revolution.
The family, the company store?
Yeah, the company store where they're issuing script, you know, monopoly money so you can get your bread. So you've got that history going. And then you have, you know, this situation now with the workers that is not being covered except by independent investigative journalism sites, independent media, because nobody else wants to touch it. And then, you know, and then the media, local media in these jurisdictions do not examine the costs, the problems with having Walmart in a jurisdiction. I did not see, maybe there are a couple of articles in the Washington City paper, the Post, the local TV stations here in Washington, D.C. When Walmart inked a deal here in Washington, mm-hmm. we have a 13-square-mile city. They wanted to put, what, six of them?
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know, there weren't even that many forts in this city during the Civil War when the city was under siege from the Confederates. So, you know, these, but it's, the media did not do any homework. It's almost like with, you know, with the Nat Stadium or right. something like that. It was just there and they took people's word for it. And I guess, you know, they heard jobs, jobs, jobs. But, you know, the people in Bangladesh who died in that fire.
Yeah, they had jobs.
Yeah. And so, you know, yeah. So you have tax money. You have people who are unhealthy, basically having a bunch of part-time jobs, stacking tank tops. You know, at subhuman wages, and but nobody's doing any investigative reporting on that. I mean, it's silly on so many levels.
Let's think about why that is. Let's circle back to the media here. I mean, Chris makes some very good points, but let's think about why the media isn't covering, because there's some systemic reasons. It's not because the media loves Walmart.
Oh no, no, I agree.
Over on people, the reason is that Walmart places ads.
Yep.
They place ads in newspapers. They place commercials on television. They have a lot of money, and they use a lot of it for advertising. And media survives based on advertising. Now, very few people get, you know, the newspaper gets only a little bit of money from their subscribers, and the television gets only a little bit of money from the cable companies. They make their money from advertising. And when you've got a very large corporation like Walmart that's got a ton of advertising dollars, you're not going to find any mainstream media that wants to touch that cash cow except WPFW, because we don't accept advertising from corporations. But we are clearly the exception. And so don't just focus on the fact they're not covering it. Chris is absolutely right. But focus on why they're not covering
it. Oh, no, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's systemic to the problem.
Well, I don't go to Walmart. I don't shop under Walmart. And here's the way I under any circumstances. I feel like this. You know, I'd like to believe, well, first of all, if I was around during slavery, I'd probably be picking cotton and baling hay, you know, unfortunately, based on my heritage. But if I wasn't, if I was a white person of, you know, good character during slavery, I wouldn't have went over to the plantation and bought cotton because I could get it cheap. I would look around and say, you know what? There's slaves over there. That goes against my moral beliefs. I'm not buying cotton from the plantation because they use slaves. That would have been a good way to think. I don't shop at Walmart for the exact same reason. I walk into Walmart today. I hate to use this kind of metaphor, but it's today's plantation. Those people there are the equivalent of slaves to some extent. They're there. They're treating them like crap. They're paying them like nothing. They're taking advantage of them, you know, and the fact of the matter is this. The argument is, well, yes, they don't have, you know, a lot of times some of these people, they don't have, you know, other options, or maybe they don't have the education or whatever, which some of them do have college degrees. They just can't get a job anymore. But the fact of the matter is this. My father had a third grade education. He was a longshoreman and he made pretty good money. They make good money. Longshoremen make, and there was a lot of longshoremen there who didn't have much education. They were hardworking, but they went there, they worked hard, and they made a good salary. And they had very good benefits, and they lived a decent middle-class life. The fact of the matter was this. The company at the time, Cotman Company, they were in union, International Longshoremen's Association Union, so they were in a union. The company was making a fortune. And the company could afford to pay the longshoremen a good salary, and it did, and still made a, and now, there were steel mills. There were various other places around the United States, and what happened then? Corporations made a fortune, but there were unions, and people who didn't have a lot of education made a very good salary, and I'm sure there are people who are listening right now who grew up in homes, or maybe even themselves, didn't have a lot of education, but because the economic model then was, and a lot of it due to unions, was that people could go to the steel mill or go to the factory or go down to General Motors or wherever you were in Detroit, and you could get a job making good money without a lot of education because of the corporate model at that time based on unions. The fact of the matter is this. Nothing has changed. Walmart and a lot of these other companies, Walmart can't say, well, we can't pay them that because we can't afford it, because clearly they can. $445 billion in revenue last year. You're not going to tell me they can't afford to pay. But the fact of the matter is now, they don't, because they can get away with it. Right now, we could have the same model, and Walmart and some of these other corporations could say, you know, we pay our people minimum, but you know what? We can pay them enough to live a reasonable middle-class lifestyle with benefits and with a retirement, but they just don't do it. The elements and within our fiscal model have not changed. What has changed is the mentality of corporate America and the fact that the average American will accept that and will accept people telling them that unions are bad for them. Mark.
Well, I don't have much to add there. you pretty much, I mean,
standing on my orange crate.
You know, we obviously have a system that rewards those that already have power, and that's actually nothing new in humanity. The powerful tend to reward themselves. We can go back to the kings, or we can go back to today. The question is, what power the people have? We have a tiny bit of independent media, things like WPFW, things like, you know, the tiny bit of progressive media that's out there. But at the end of the day, to play by the system, you got to play to the corporations, and that's why, you know, the Democrats are better than the Republicans, but even the Democrats often have to play to corporations to get reelected, because money makes the world go round right now, and it controls our political system. Unless and until we have public financing campaigns, it's always going to be that way.
Yeah, and you know, Mark's absolutely right. I mean, you know, you're depending on ad buys from the people that you're going to complain about.
Right.
It's just not going to work. I mean, you know, that's why Don Draper made all that money at Mad Men in the 60s. But it's, and then, you know, funneled that through to his clients. And it's, I think you also have to, if you can look at contrary models, like if you look at Costco,
Costco does
not advertise because they've got members. And that guy who runs Costco pays his workers benefits and a decent salary.
Yep.
And he is not relying on, you know, seasonal labor, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he is doing a better job with his workforce than some universities are.
Right.
You know, where you have maybe 60-70% of the faculty, maybe 80, maybe even 90 are taught by adjunct. People with PhDs that are almost like migrant labor.
Yep.
And getting maybe $1,500 a course.
Yep.
Or something like that. And so, you know, he's doing a better job than some top universities are. And not Georgetown.
Clearly, because you're Georgetown.
Put that in now. Yeah. Georgetown, Hoya Saxon. But universities.
Nobody ever bites the hand that feeds them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's a sad. It's a sad situation, and I think that the media outlets need to do more stuff. You know, I think NPR did a profile on Costco, but nobody talks about that. All they're really doing is
Costco doesn't advertise. Why would they blow their horn?
You know, so they're good as an academic study, but I think what media outlets are doing is basically segmenting the market with. If you're going to be quote anti Walmart close quote, then you take all your advertising from Target, and that's going to be pushed towards a more kind of younger, or an upscale audience, even though or consumer base, even though the products are, you know, they're made in the nicer part of the sweatshop.
You're right. Yeah,
not the sweatier part of the sweatshop.
You're right.
But
they're made with grown-ups instead of the part where 4-year-old kids are getting their hands
exactly.
cut off making
so,
them.
So that's how they really quote get around it close quote if they're anti Walmart. It's just market segmentation. But nobody's looking at this and saying, well, let's study how Walmart does business. Or, you know, I mean, I even heard somebody. I think it wasn't Fox. It was one of the cable giants. It was CNN. They were talking about Walmart, and they're saying, well, Walmart is self-insured. You know, they're talking about Obamacare, and they help out their, you know, that way they can buy insurance cheaper. Well, you know,
they just don't give it to their employees.
They give it to some of the top level people, and maybe the store manager and the assistant manager. Everybody wearing the short white,
the little smiley
short
face.
Yeah. You know, but that's about it. And so it's really terrible. But nobody wants to profile this. And Mark is right, because it's money, 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 and it's probably a lot of it is philosophy too. We're rich, you're rich. You know, we're all part of the same.
That's it.
You know.
Well, and the other part Mark said, and that's important, and it's something I believe, unfortunately, cynically, that we're never going to get, and that is public financing. And why? Well, when we hear, you know, how many billions were spent, you know, in order to become president now, you got to get $1 billion. You have to have $1 billion now in order to become president to spend on all of this advertising, et cetera, right? So we say, well, public financing would make things better. Well, where's the billion going? The $1 billion is going to the radio stations, the cable giants. It's going directly into the pockets of the mainstream media. There is no way in the world that the mainstream media is going to ever say, well, you know, we'd be better off if you guys would stop handing us these multi-billions of dollars, because billion is just for each presidential candidate. We haven't even gotten to the Senate and the rest of Congress and the local races and all of the above.
Yeah, and it's not just what we think of as the cable giants. And you know, there are other outlets like Clear Channel,
right,
or Sinclair,
yep,
or that own a lot of FCC licenses.
Yep.
They're getting all these billions, too. So, you know, you don't want to single out just Fox, CBS, ABC. I mean, there's a whole bunch of big shot, you know, media conglomerates that have their hand out every election.
And so while we say things like we need, public financing, the bottom line is the corporate media will fight that down to their last breath because, hey, that is their last breath. You there, Mark?
Oh, yeah. No.
Mark's sticking his hand up there by that post going, me too. Yeah, me too.
I mean, that's exactly what I said. That is, just watch where the money goes. The main thing is that people, you know, when they're watching Jody Arias or watching all the pretty graphics on the screen, they're not watching where the money goes. Follow the money, they said in Watergate. And in this case, the money is from advertising. And it's the corporations that control it, and they control our politicians, they control our media, they control everything because they got the money. And they use the money to control everything. And it's very hard to get around that corporate filter because it's not just in government, but it's in the media too.
Yeah, and you know, I'll throw this out, and you know, with we've got a few minutes, but the so-called scandals, you know, the idea of Fox, that they're upset because we could get into that in detail, though we don't really have time, but at some point I believe the FBI got some emails or something of some of their reporters regarding an investigation. You know, the irony here is this. Here are the people who hacked into the telephones of average, they hacked into the telephones of politicians, they hacked into the telephone of a missing girl in Britain, in England. The missing girl, they hack into her telephone and they move stuff around in it, and the family and the authorities thought the girl was still alive because, hey, somebody's in her phone moving things around, must be her. It wasn't. Here are people who hack into the telephones of the average citizen saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, somebody was reading our emails. That's the real irony there. That's what I say, come on. And I'm supposed to feel, I just can't bring myself to feel sorry for the media when I watch them shaft us. Nobody's going to convince me that that is either the only media corporation or media outlet or the only branch of that particular organization that's been hacking into anybody's emails or telephones or anything else.
No, well, the irony is wasted because irony is not anything that TV news does well.
Right.
It's too complicated. But, you know, it's you have a situation where they have been, you know, they were trying to work on stories. They had these sources, the leaked sources. And, you know, you have a situation where you have a president and an attorney general that were raked over the coals by the same Republicans for the leaks. So very robotically, they go after the leaks, what they think was going to happen. And, you know, then with Rosen and Fox News, I mean, I think legitimately people should be upset about that kind of stuff. The problem is it's been going on since, you know, September 12th, 2001,
right,
and then maybe 50 years before that, you know, in various guises. And, you know, you cannot single out this one instance, this president, and say this is the worst scandal of all time. This is an affront to the First Amendment, when they have been complicit in really closing off debate and news just from, as Mark said, because of a business model,
yep,
or because of philosophy and politics. I mean, it's really just the pot calling the kettle black.
I had a guy on my show who was the leaker who was the guy from NSA.
Right.
Who, when he during the Bush administration, who came out and told everyone that they were reading for no reason, they were reading the average American's emails, they were reading our mail, they're reading all of this stuff, and they're walking up and down the hall laughing about it. Hey, would you look at what we found in Garland Nixon's email? Right. Son of a gun! Hey, if that ever got out, he'd be done. You know, so all of a sudden now they wake up today, and as if we didn't know this was going, you know, God forbid, the CIA, you think they were doing this in the 50s, you know, but, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but now there is this, you know, all of a sudden, the people who are hacking everybody else's cell phones are all up in the air. I don't think that it's right or it's a good idea, but I don't think that it's anything new. Mark.
Gone, you took the words out of my mouth. I remember I was on the air 8 years ago when it came out that the Bush administration had hacked into more than two-thirds of Americans' emails, more than 200 million. And I know it was mine, and I know it was yours, Garland, and God knows it was Terry DeKester's because they got him on a microscope first.
You're right about that.
But basically, anyone who didn't have Quest Communications, which is mostly out in Colorado and the West, was the only major phone company that refused to hand over the data to the government. AT&T gave it over. Verizon gave it over. Just about every other phone company, Sprint, gave it over as well. And we didn't even hear about it. And when it finally came out and there was this expose in the New York Times, I remember the Republicans saying, ho-hum, so what? So the government's reading everyone's emails. It doesn't matter. If you're not a terrorist, don't be concerned. Then compare it to the present case with Rosen. And I got to say something. I don't know all the facts of the case. I don't think any of us do right now. But I am very sympathetic when we have a secret spy, an operative, in the only nation in the world that has threatened to nuke the United States, which is North Korea, and we have a guy, a mole in our government, and I don't have any sympathy, I'm sorry, for if the charges against Stephen Kim are true, the State Department analyst who gave away top secret information that exposed our spy in North Korea. You know, I'm all about whistleblowers. I love exposing government misconduct. But exposing a spy in a very, very dangerous country, if there's any place I ever want to monitor reporters, it's that case. So I'm not saying it's ever proper. But if it's ever proper, this was the proper case.
And I agree wholeheartedly. But in my alter ego as a journalism professor, I have to say, you know, intruding on the press is bad.
Yeah,
but when you go underneath the story, yeah, I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost Scooter Libby in Mirrors, you know.
Yeah, and you have to think to yourself, the three of us, and if I ask myself, you know, if somebody walked up to me and said, you know, here's all the secret, here's the nuclear codes, hey, why don't you just go and put them on WPFW? You gotta have some responsibility. I might think if somebody had the nuclear codes, they might hack into the system and launch a couple, you know?
Right,
so at
right.
some point, doesn't Rosen have to say, well, you know, yeah, this is a great story, but, you know, I could cause, you know, thermonuclear war, but hey, what the heck? We're gonna get, I'll get a Pulitzer Prize.
Right, and he gets to write his copy and be on TV, and, you know, will there be any analysis about this? I mean, what was the journalistic purpose? I mean, what would Fox have actually broadcast? What would that show have looked like? I mean, I don't know if it
a mushroom
would have added.
Cloud.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know if it would have added to the debate, added to the relative IQ of the average Fox viewer, or our understanding
of
relations. Right. With North Korea, I mean, what was on the balance there?
All he reported was that North Korea said that if we went to the UN to get sanctions, they were going to run some more nuclear tests.
Right.
You know, that's, I guess, of some interest. I think it's of a lot of interest to our government, who needs to monitor those nuclear tests. To the average American, I don't know that it's that important. I'll tell you one difference between this and the Associated Press. The Associated Press had the decency to warn the government to say, hey, we found out about this undercover plot, this terrorist in Yemen. Would writing this story expose the operative? And the government said, yes, it would. Give us a few days to get that guy to
exactly.
safety.
Right.
And the AP did. Jim Rosen didn't do that. And so I have a lot less sympathy in the Rosen case than I do in the AP case.
That's right. We're running short of time. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 here, FM here in Washington, D.C. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine and our special guest co-host,
Chris Chambers
out of Georgetown University. First of all, I got to thank the man, Bill Witherspoon. Bill Witherspoon's right over there, and he is looking at some very strange electronic device with lights blinking and flashing. I think either one of two things. Either he is remotely running the space shuttle, or he's running WPFW, but I can't really figure out which one of it is with all the lights flashing and blinking and sliding and all that kind of stuff. But Bill Witherspoon does a wonderful job, and if not for Bill Witherspoon, you wouldn't be listening to us right here on WPFW. Well, guess what? Next, Robin's Place with Robin Holden and Carol Tyson. And let me tell you something, they've got good music, You've been listening to Mark and Chris and I, and we've been talking politics, and we've been ranting and raving. And now you're going to get some nice, calming music. You're going to get, I mean, if you are an intellectual, a professional, you're going to listen to this stuff. And even if you're not too bright like Mark and I, you'll probably like it anyway. But at any rate, I want to thank you. I'll be back with News Views next Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Chris, I want to thank you very much. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, how can they do it?
At my email address, cac228@georgetown.edu. I answer all emails.
Wonderful. Mark?
Go to my website, marklevinetalk.com. My Twitter feed is at marklevinetalk. And follow me on Facebook as well.
And you can follow me on Facebook, Garland Nixon, GARLANDNIXON. Twitter is at Garland Nixon, or email is garlandn@gmail.com. All very consistent. Thank you very much. This is WPFW, Robin's Place. Good music. Stay tuned. Coming on at 7.